Bloomberg Surveillance with Ken Pruitt and Tom Keene. On demand via our Bloomberg Radio Plus app. Free for iPhone and Android devices.
Carl Weinberg with us. Without question, the most fiery note of the weekend. And he joins us now from High Frequency Economics. Carl, good morning.
Good morning, Tom.
You are just beyond skeptical about the Japanese reflation experiment. There's a lot of people pushing back. What do the optimists have wrong about QE 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 all combined?
Well, you know, I think the Japanese are pushing an economy with fiscal monetary policy that's in a very different position from any economy we've ever seen pushed by fiscal or monetary policy before. With a falling population, they're looking at a constraint on their ability to produce. And that means if they goose up demand with fiscal spending, with monetary stimulus, they're just going to drive money out the door in the form of imports because they can't make more stuff for themselves. They're maxed out because their workforce is coming down.
Okay, that's a big, broader demographic structural analysis. The present analysis is the U.S. is reflating. Europe is, in some sense, within crisis, reflating. Each of these experiments are different. If our yields go up 2.05% now on the 10-year, if we go to 2.20 or 2.30, that's not the end of the day, is it?
No, I don't think so. I mean, the U.S. economy is growing at a 2 to 3% rate despite an ongoing fiscal drag of about 1.5%. And that's coming about for a number of reasons, not the least of which is that monetary policy is still enormously accommodative and making it possible to offset some of the fiscal drag that we've seen. So the U.S. economy has a real strong pulse to it. Neither Europe nor Japan do.
Right.
So that makes it a little bit more impervious.
And the distinction here, folks, is the 10-year yield in Japan, let's call it for conversation 0.9%, just under 1%. And if that goes up, how much do you end up with their stock market cratering?
Well, I think you end up with their stock market cratering regardless. I mean, any rational assessment at the fundamentals that support the Nikkei have to suggest that the market got way ahead of itself. I mean, from a technical point of view, technicians will tell you it's above its 200-day and its 65-day moving average. If you just look at the fundamentals, the economy is basically cratering. We've had a couple of good months worth of data, but they haven't been enough to offset the bad months that came before it. We're back to levels of industrial production that were last seen in 1988. We have an unemployment rate that's held down
okay.
because the labor force
I want to rip up the script right here because I went through this with a real GDP number. They reported a great real GDP number, but deflation was horrendous. Nominal GDP, that animal spirit, was flatline like a bad medical chart. You tell me industrial production's back to what year?
1988. And
then why do they feel better? And why do the streets feel better? And why is Japan taking a victory lap now of recovery?
I think that the average person on the street believes in Abenomics. They believe in what the politicians are telling them. They certainly believe that what was tried before wasn't working and this is different. So we have a burst of confidence. We see it in some of the business surveys. We see it in some of the consumer surveys. And people have been going out and spending a little bit more because they feel that help is on the way. The disappointment trade, however, is going to be when that help does not translate into more jobs, when that help clearly won't be able to reverse the demographic challenges that Japan faces. And of course, we have that huge fiscal debt that has to be serviced each year by an increasingly smaller number, fewer number of people working, and an increasing those people who are working also have to support an increasingly bigger number of retirees. Ultimately, this falls apart probably very soon.
Yeah, it's the question before us is when. In other words, it's way too early to look at the Japanese numbers and say this is working, isn't working. It's only been a couple of months, monetary policy working with its long lag. But your argument is it's not going to work. And you look at first quarter GDP and companies not investing. You know, people spend more, but companies not investing and just no reason to.
Well, that's right. Investment's been going down for 15 years. But I mean, you're right, Mike. We really want to look for, as people in the markets, at the day-to-day, the week-to-week, rather than the longer-term trend. So we're going to see a number like this Friday. We're going to get an inflation number or a CPI number for Japan. And that's going to show that the rate of price declines actually lessened in the latest monthly report because the yen got cheaper and that made import prices go up. And people are going to read this as saying, aha, The Bank of Japan is succeeding in creating inflation, even though it's not, and this number has nothing or very little to do with that. And they're going to go out and they're going to sell bonds even more and push bond yields up even higher. Because even though in the near term the reality isn't that good, the perception is much stronger than the reality. And in the short term, it's the perception that drives the markets.
Carl, I just did a trick chart out to Bloomberg Radio Plus because it looks a lot like the Japanese yen or the Japanese interest rate, and that it, well, it's not. It's CBS's stock. Mm-hmm. And again, the timeline is different. It's much longer timeline, but we see a moonshot in equities. We see a moonshot in Japanese equities. We see a moonshot beginning in interest rates. All of this talks about central bank distortion. When do we finally get to the point of end of distortion, when people say enough to these moonshots?
Well, you know, Tom, my colleague Jim O'Sullivan is pretty constructive on U.S. equities. Let's start there. You know, and the dividend returns that we're seeing there compared to what we're getting on bonds. I mean, you pointed out that the 30-year bond pays 3%, and the dividend yields we're seeing on stocks are in the order on average of about 6 or 7% or thereabouts. That's a pretty good value in today's market. And if you believe that the reason that the Fed is going to taper down and eventually start to retract some of its monetary accommodation is that the economy is improving, then that's an even additional argument to get in. And finally, you can compound that by the fact that all the fiscal drag on the U.S. economy is going to dissipate over the course of the next year. So you have good reasons to be positive about stocks in the U.S. No surprise that people are interested in them.
Raises the question of how much we, our markets, are being influenced by what is happening in other countries, yeah, particularly Japan. Again, is it too early to say that people are seeing a spillover from Japan?
Well, I think that's the next big thing, Mike. I agree with you. The Japanese money that's being printed is not going to go to work in Japan. As we were discussing before, people don't want to invest in new plant and equipment and technology in an economy that's shrinking. And there is the capacity constraint as well from the labor market. So the money that Japan's printing is going to go overseas. But for goodness sakes, they've been buying bonds for 7 weeks now. It's way too soon to start looking for an impact of monetary policy. I mean, if you had a real monetarist sitting in this chair rather than me, they'd tell you that it would take years sometimes for monetary policy to affect the economy.
And let me ask this to both of you. Michael McKee, I'm going to put you in the interviewee seat. Right now, there's this idea of, is there patience in Japan? If they do actions and the payoff is months or quarters, or if Bill Poole was here, years out. Mike McKee, do you observe patience within the different things you read in Japan?
I hate to sound consistent here, but it's a little early to say. What you're getting is forecasts that the Bank of Japan and Abenomics have about a year before people start to raise questions about patience. They want to see some sort of both legislative action on the third arrow that he's talked about, some sort of reform of the labor markets and et cetera in Japan. And they also want to see inflation, or at least inflation expectations, start to rise. If that happens, then you'll see confidence build, and it may build on itself.
To the heart of that, will the deflation metric move? I mean, one of the great things about this phony real GDP number for Japan was it was accompanied by substantial 1.2% price decline. When does that reverse?
Well, I don't think it does. And I don't believe that Abenomics can reflate the economy. I mean, if you increase consumer spending and it all comes from imports, then you've done nothing for GDP or for domestic production. And therefore, I don't think it will affect prices. And in a world where Japan is open to trade, anything that raises the prices for domestic goods is just going to attract more imports in the door. So I don't think, Mike, you're going to see this price push anytime soon. And my question about Japan is, and one about patience, but one about time, because the bills still have to be paid. The government debt is 250, 260, 270% of GDP, depending on whose metrics you use. And every day, fewer people are servicing that debt. And every day, that debt gets bigger. And as these JGB yields go up, now every day, the average cost of funding that debt gets higher and higher. And the consequence of this we're seeing is that the current account is gradually slipping into deficit. It's still a surplus, but it's slipping into deficit. And when it does, that's when things get really gnarly in Japan for the financial system. So it's not a question of the patience of the people. I think it's a question of how much time is left before something starts to go really bad in the financial system.
Let's go over to Europe. It's been quiet. Spreads are in. Why are spreads so improved in Europe if the real economic data is so, I guess, moldy would be the right word?
Gosh, you know, Tom, you've got a real short memory because you're looking at spreads for Italy of close to 400 basis points. And it's true that they used to be as much as 500 or 600 basis points.
But they're still elevated.
They're still elevated. They, historically, through most of EMU, they've been 25 basis points. So things are less gnarly than they were. But if you notice, those Italian bond yields were creeping up a bit last week. Mm-hmm. And we've got incipient political instability in Italy right now. The Letta government is fighting with Team Berlusconi already, as Berlusconi fights to stay out of jail. There's the very real possibility, as Berlusconi's parties are now gaining in the popular polling, that they'll drop Letta and force new elections. And as all of this happens, both parties are slowly unwinding some of the fiscal austerity measures that previously made people want to buy Italian bonds. So we see an unwinding of the stability in Italy, I think, in the very, very, very near future. And that, I think, is the next big challenge to Europe, that we have a problem of blow up in the Italian bond markets.
Big jump? When you say blow up, or do we just see... unless there's some sort of policy change, a knee-jerk political reaction.
Yeah, it doesn't have to go very far to cause trouble. I mean, we're at 4% now. Let's take my colleague Jim O'Sullivan's forecast for U.S. Treasuries. He's at 2.9% for the end of this year. Okay. Now, historically, the correlation between German government bonds and U.S. Treasuries is about 0.91, 0.92. So that means that based on history, we should expect to see German bond yields rise as U.S. Treasury yields come up, and that means Italian bond yields are going to rise as well. 100 basis points onto German bond yields will probably add more than 100 basis points onto Italian bond yields, and that puts us up in the 5.5% to 6% range. Italy cannot sustain its debt if it has to borrow at those kinds of rates.
Does it force the ECB into OMT to use acronyms?
That was very good. I can't do that. That was outstanding.
You know, OMT is a big bluff, and I don't think that the sun, the moon, and the earth moving together in the same direction would be able to get the ECB to get out there to buy bonds. If it does buy bonds, Mike, their license under OMT is only in the 1 to 3 year range. And for that to happen, first ESM, which doesn't have any money, has to be buying bonds in the long end. And for that to happen, there has to be a program. And for that to happen, the Germans have to agree to it. And there's just so much that has to happen. OMT is an idle threat that's keeping the market at bay, but it's never, ever, ever going to be triggered.
Carl Weinberg, High Frequency Economics, thank you so much.
Bloomberg Surveillance, weekday mornings at 7 Eastern. In New York on Bloomberg 1130. In Boston on 1200 AM and 94.5 FM HD2. Or on Sirius and XM Satellite Radio Channel 113. Copyright 2013 Bloomberg LP.